You're listening to the Assembly Call IU podcast and postgame show, the place where Indiana fans across the globe hang out online after every IU basketball game. If you want to get more out of being an IU basketball fan, then make sure you're subscribed to our email newsletter. Go to assemblycall.com/join today and sign up for free. That's assemblycall.com/join. This week's edition of the Assembly Call is brought to you by SeatGeek. As you know, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have SeatGeek on my phone. I've used it several times in the last year. I used it when Yogi Ferrell was playing for the Mavericks and went to see a couple of games. Used it to buy my wife tickets to a concert, so I can personally vouch for it. I use it. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats to any event that I want to go to. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and help you find amazing deals. And best of all, listeners to the Assembly Call get $20 off of their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code ASSEMBLY today. That's promo code ASSEMBLY, A-S-S-E-M-B-L-Y, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And now, get ready for another brand new edition of the Assembly Call.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important IU basketball stories from the past 7 days. This is our 46th edition of the Assembly Call Radio show, and it is our 338th episode overall of the Assembly Call, which we are recording on the evening of Thursday, September 28th, 2017. I'm your host this week, Andy Bottoms. We've given Jared the night off. No truth to the rumors that that's because he has any involvement in the NCAA scandal that came out this week. And so we're going to begin this week how we begin every episode of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. And in the midst of all the chaos surrounding college basketball this week, IU held its media day on Thursday, and as you might suspect, it produced a handful of storylines and themes destined to get IU fans even more excited for the on-court start of the Archie Miller era. There was talk of leadership. There was talk of an ultra-motivated Robert Johnson, which compelled Jared to make an off-air Greg Graham comparison. There was talk of Josh Newkirk emerging as the point guard and of a more offensive-minded Juwan Morgan. We got insight into Archie's vision for the team and for individual players, and we saw multiple guys on the team talk about how beneficial Miller's background as a point guard has already proven to be. But one number was truly music to the ears of IU fans, and that number was 75, as in the percent of workout time spent on defensive principles. If I could, I'd pipe in some kind of angelic sound or a few hallelujahs in the background, but after a season of abysmal defense last season, where assignments were missed, mistakes were repeated, and excuses were made, there can be no better banner moment than a renewed focus on defense that was discussed, and it sounds like has been subsequently backed up in the offseason. And with that, let me introduce my esteemed co-host for this week's show, which once again features a special guest. My co-host needs no introduction, mostly because I had no intention of writing one, but since Jared went ahead and put one together, I figured why not. So please allow me to welcome the man to my left, a man who is refreshing his Twitter page literally right now in hopes that news is breaking that Coach K is connected to the college basketball corruption scandal. He's a columnist for The Big Lead, and he is one of the few people connected to college basketball who is actually sleeping easy right now, because his shot doctor diagnoses are free. He is Ryan Phillips. Ryan, there's plenty to rant about from college basketball this week, or I suppose you can hit something IU-centric. So what are you? What's your rant for this week?
Well, first of all, I should have been charging shoe companies for my shot doctor tips, apparently, because they were just ponying up cash to everybody. But I think that the big story, of course, is the raids by the FBI and the arrests and everything. And You know, we're going to get into this later, but this is something you just hear everybody say. Well, we knew this was going on, but, and we knew this was going on, but, and I don't know how, if everybody knew this was going on. And look, we've all heard, I'm sure all three of us have heard whispers of this before. And you know, even shouts, but how did it take the FBI getting involved, to have this come to the forefront? I mean, I don't, if this was so pervasive and as widespread as we're hearing, because everything that's come out so far, we keep hearing that, oh, it's just the tip of the iceberg and there's way more to come and more schools are going to get caught up and more coaches are going to get caught up in this. I just don't know how this was able to be, you know, not quiet because we heard about it, but how this could possibly have just lingered in the background and not, you know, had somebody get caught before. And it's insane. We know that the influence of shoe companies and the influence of, you know, AAU coaches and recruiting handlers and all of those things was going to lead to this eventually. And I think that nobody, when this came out, was surprised. I think the only surprise was that the FBI were the ones doing the NCAA's dirty work. And when it comes to Rick Pitino, again, not really a surprise after what we've heard over the last few months coming out of that, or I guess maybe the last 3 years coming out of that program. Really no surprise that Louisville got hit. And I think everybody in college basketball right now is sort of bracing for the other shoe to drop and for them to get caught up in it, because people I've talked to have said that there's a lot more coming. It's going to get a lot worse.
And now to my right, we have a man whose list of credentials is longer than his hair. He runs the sports media program at IU. He's the director of the National Sports Journalism Center. He's the longtime host of Crimson Cast, and he's the star of the greatest IU football animated GIF since the Xander Diamant strut. Ladies and gentlemen, he is Galen Clavio. Galen, what is your opening thought after a wild couple days in the college basketball world?
Well, first of all, thanks to you guys once again for inviting me back. I always worry that my prior conduct will not earn me another invitation, so it's always good to be here.
We're always shocked you want to come on here and class the joint up.
I mean, it's a great way to spend the evening. It really is. No, you know, my thoughts are similar, to Ryan's, at least in terms of general area. It's interesting because, you know, this should be the happiest time of the year as a college basketball fan. And, you know, I'm still unabashedly a college basketball fan. It's probably the sport I get the most excited for every single year. And, you know, the practice is starting. Media day was today. You know, Hoosier Hysteria is coming up in a few weeks. The season's going to start in about 5 weeks. And yet, this is probably already the strangest season that we're ever going to live through. There's such a cloud right now that's hanging over every aspect of the game and the people involved in the game, you know, not just the coaches, but, you know, many of the top players across the country, you know, certainly people that we don't even know about, but who are very involved in the game of college basketball. And I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen moving forward. I certainly have a lot of questions, as you know, as Ryan very clearly elucidated, you know, about how things got to where they are, how we didn't hear about anything. My questions are more forward. It's like, you know, this, how is this going to play out for this season? This frankly isn't an NCAA investigation where they're going to be like, oh, we'll just wait till after the season to break some news. I mean, you could very easily see something completely devastating pop up in December or January. And it's unfortunate from a personal perspective, because I was really getting very excited about this particular IU season in the context of college basketball and kind of seeing if IU would start that process of retaking its spot at the top of the mountain of college basketball. Not to say that I'm not still excited about watching IU moving up the ladder, but I think a lot of teams that are at the top of the ladder are going to fall right off the ladder, given some of the potential NCAA or legal issues that they'll be facing. So a lot of things on my mind with this, and I'm looking forward to having some tangible basketball to talk about, because while the stuff that we've seen out of the FBI is certainly very important, it's also not the fun part of college basketball to be discussing.
Yeah, without a doubt. So yeah, all the angles that you mentioned, we hope to touch on here during our brief hour on the radio, probably is one that we could go for certainly more than our normal allotted time. So we'll try to fit in as much as we can. So including some overarching thoughts on the NCAA scandal, as we talked about, some thoughts on how that might impact IU, as well as, you know, hitting any other key takeaways from Media Day. There was certainly a lot that came out of there. And as a college basketball fan like Galen and an IU fan, it was nice to have that on my Twitter timeline for at least a small period of time, as opposed to other accusations and speculation.
Yeah, don't get used to it for the next month or so.
I don't intend to. It was a brief respite at least, and I just enjoyed it for what it was. So then we'll kind of talk about what that might mean for this college basketball season as a whole, one that I think now has a whole lot more uncertainty than it did a few days ago. And then want to end with a more journalistic angle to all this that I found particularly interesting, and I think one that Ryan and Galen can give some good perspective on. So try to fit in a few questions along the way that you've sent in as we go, although we'll probably hold some of your more IU-specific questions until next week. So we'll hit all that coming up on Assembly Call Radio. And quickly, a word about this week's sponsor for Assembly Call Radio, SeatGeek. Remember that when you need tickets to a sporting event, concert, or most other live events, SeatGeek is the best place to go to ensure that you get the best deal. Their app and website are easy to use, and the color-coded deal rater makes it easy to see which tickets are delivering the best value at any given time. And here's the URL to keep handy when you're preparing to buy IU basketball tickets, iutickets.shop. Typing that URL into your browser will take you directly to the IU basketball page on SeatGeek's website. If you want tickets to Indiana's two exhibition games on October 28th and November 5th, tickets are available for as low as $17. Again, check those out at iutickets.shop. And since that is our affiliate URL, we do get a commission whenever you use it and then end up purchasing tickets. In other words, you get a great deal on IU tickets. Another passionate IU fan will be in the stands to cheer on our Hoosiers, and you help support the Assembly Call. A win-win-win. And again, that URL is iutickets.shop. And if it's your first time using SeatGeek, don't forget the promo code Assembly. Use it when you make your first purchase, and you'll get $20 back after that purchase is completed. Again, the promo code is Assembly. All right, you're listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Ryan Phillips and this week's guest host, Galen Clavio from Crimson Cast. So guys, wanted to kind of, you know, get a couple other overarching thoughts on this. I think we want to hit it from a couple different angles. But, you know, Ryan, what is your impression on, you know, I think everybody kind of says this is the tip of the iceberg. I don't know that anybody has any idea what that actually means, other than, you know, no one feels safe at this point. But, you know, in your eyes, based on what you've read, how far reaching do you think something like this ends up being?
Well, the first thing that came to mind when I was reading all the document, when I was reading, you know, the case, the charging documents and everything on these guys is, okay, we know that schools were directly connected to these shoe companies and funneling money to kids and all that stuff. I want to know how many schools didn't know that, let's say, Adidas was funneling money to recruits and saying, hey, go to this school who's recruiting you because they're an Adidas school. So we want you to show up there, and then we'll, you know, and then we'll start a relationship now, and we'll wind up, you know, because of this, we'll wind up having a relationship with you for later when you turn pro. There's going to be a number of schools that didn't know this was going on at their school. I think that's indisputable that'll happen as well. Certainly some of the big schools were doing this completely on purpose and were in league with the shoe companies. But I think that this is going to be something where we're going to see it balloon out to cover pretty much all of the major schools in college basketball, because there's so much money involved and there's so much that these shoe companies had to gain by doing this. As far as where do I think it's going to go and how wide reaching it's going to be, I'll tell you this, all of these guys are going to flip immediately, because, you know, when it's the NCAA coming at you, and I mentioned this, I was on Ken Sterling's show this week, and I mentioned, you know, when it's the NCAA coming at you, the worst that could happen is you get banned for life from the game and you go do something else for work, you know, or you get banned, you know, usually you'll get a 2-3-4 year show cause penalty where you can't coach for a while and then you can come back. This is prison we're talking about. And so these guys are all going to flip. It's, and they're all going to talk about everybody else, and they're going to open up the floodgates on this stuff. So, I think we're going to find out pretty quickly, how deep this runs. And, as far as I know, just from talking to people today and part of yesterday, this is going to go pretty far, and it's going to be pretty wide as far as most people expect. And this is, again, the tip of the iceberg, because the dominoes are going to start falling when these guys start talking to the feds.
Galen, one other question for you. There's kind of two elements of what happened here, at least two big elements. One of those is, you know, the Louisville Brian Bowen type scenario where recruits are getting paid to go. And the other is what we saw more with Chuck Person at Auburn and some of those other guys where they're getting money to funnel athletes to specific agents, to financial advisors, things like that. I don't know if that's a 50-50 split between, you know, those kinds of things happening. But I mean, is there one of those that you feel like is more prevalent that's going to be, you know, a bigger part of the scandal when it's all said and done? Or are they kind of equal parts, you know, concerning as you look forward to what might happen?
Oh, I mean, I think they're equal parts concerning. I don't know if we can really tell what side of that is more prevalent than the other. If I had to guess, I'd say the recruiting inducements are a little more in line with probably what we're going to be seeing, because, you know, now that you've got the, you know, the head of global basketball marketing for Adidas, you know, awaiting his day in court, you've got the Nike EYBL camps, computers rated.
Don't underestimate that. That's enormous because all the top kids in the country, it seems, playing EYBL. And that's going to be huge.
So I look at that and I say, I think what we're going to end up hearing is a lot more of this kid was sent here, and here was the money that was, you know, funneled through X, Y, and Z accounts to make that happen. I think that a lot of it comes down to what the FBI is interested in the first place. And that's the thing I keep coming back and asking myself, like, what was it that got them interested in this case in the first place? I mean, what we've seen so far, while staggering from a college basketball perspective, in the big scheme of federal prosecution, we're talking about small potatoes here. I mean, we're not talking about millions of dollars going back and forth. We're talking about, in some cases, not even six figures. So I do wonder what the end game is. And I think the end game lies in what Ryan just said, you know, what you see in the Nike computers, what the Adidas people are willing to talk about in terms of some of their bigger players and the way that they've moved around.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I feel like there's going to be, and those are the things that you can really more closely tie as you start thinking about, did the university know about this and some of those kinds of things. The other stuff in theory could be passed off as a rogue assistant doing, taking money to kind of funnel guys to certain places. But I think the other is a little bit more systematic in nature, and you start to get into some of the things that are starting to emerge about Louisville and looking at it that way. So, yeah, if I had to, I think what's on those computers and the Adidas and the Nike, the shoe company piece of this is really where the schools and the programs as a whole are more likely to get taken down, if you will.
Well, it's worth noting because we have an Indiana show, the whole state of Indiana, and it's worth noting that today Rick Pitino was outed as one of the coaches in the documents, and we sort of expected that, but that was sort of the reporting is now that he's one of the guys who was who the shoe companies were talking about as being very involved in all this stuff as well. So,
I'm sure happy lawyers in Louisville tonight.
Yeah.
As a result of that,
I'm sure that all came as a great shock to Rick Pitino. Though, if we've learned anything about him, that's was shocking.
He couldn't believe it that his number had been called by these guys.
Crazy.
Offering $100,000. It's amazing.
All right. So coming up on the Assembly Call, we'll dig a little bit more in any IU related parts of this, and also talk a little bit more about things that came out of IU's Media Day, which took place today. Stick with us.
Hey, just a real quick note here. The next time that you are going to shop online for IU gear, use the URL iustore.shop. That will take you to the official IU online store where they have anything you could possibly want. Candy stripe pants, the Script Indiana warm-up shirt, all kinds of IU gear. And that URL, iustore.shop, is actually our affiliate URL. So when you use it and buy something, we get paid a commission. So it's a great way for you to shop for the IU gear that you need and to support the Assembly Call at the same time. Again, the URL is iustore.shop. Please bookmark it and use it the next time you're looking to buy IU gear. We appreciate it. Now back to the show.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Ryan Phillips and Galen Clavio, the host of Crimson Cast. So, we talked a little bit about the NCAA scandal and what that means. I think obviously people who are listening to this show probably have questions that are a little more IU-centric about it in terms of what to think. So I think a couple angles that I'll throw out. You know, one of those obviously is the highly publicized recruitment of Romeo Langford, who not coincidentally removed Louisville from his list of schools under consideration. So certainly that feels like good news for IU. Would also add that at today's media day, Archie Miller did kind of address this, and I won't read the entire statement. There's a lot of things there. You know, he did kind of say, brings it back to Indiana. Obviously, as a staff, we've met with Fred Glass multiple times, talked about a lot of things, have no reason to think that Indiana is involved in anything right now, focused on the task, so to speak, at hand of running the program and doing things the right way. So, you know, I kind of like that he got out in front of it. You know, certainly if you start looking other places with former assistants and different things like that, there are, if you want to look hard enough, and maybe you don't need to look that hard, there's some dots that you can potentially connect and some angles to look at. Those I think are probably things we're not going to get into speculating on too much. So I guess, Ryan, I'll go to you first with this. The way I kind of boiled down the question was, you know, what advice would you give to IU fans trying to make heads or tails out of all this?
You know, I think that if you're at any major school right now, you've kind of got to grip the seat and just kind of bear it right now, because we don't know where this is going. We don't. And I would not be shocked if pretty much everyone gets touched by this in some way. I mean, in some ways, IU has already been touched because it's an Adidas. There was a huge Adidas scandal, and IU's an Adidas school. That doesn't mean that IU cheated. It means that, you know, the school and the people that IU have relationships with are certainly involved in this. And so, again, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because this is unprecedented. As I said, this is the FBI. This isn't an NCAA investigation. This is the FBI. And when it gets to that level, you don't know what's going to happen. And we don't know, quite frankly, because we've never been here before. You know, this has never happened before. And we don't know which way this is going to go. We don't know how far the tentacles are going to reach. And so what I would say, if you're an IU fan, is focus on basketball for now until you have a reason to focus otherwise. But I don't think anybody in a major program should be shocked if there's some level of, I wouldn't say involvement, because that sort of implies an active component to it. I would say just don't be shocked if there's some kind of if this touches your program in some way, because it's shaping up to be an enormous scandal that's going to change the way we look at college basketball and maybe even college athletics in general, because you can't think this isn't going on in football as well.
Well, no, certainly that can't be happening. Galen, what are your thoughts on, you know, kind of fans for this? I think it was, people had a rush in a lot of cases to go and, you know, kind of point the finger at a school like Louisville and things like that, which is fun on certain levels. But
everybody was waiting all day yesterday for the hammer to drop on Kentucky. Let's face it. Yeah. Let's not lie about it. Everybody was waiting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would say, I think obviously all of it is speculation, and to think that, you know, any school should feel 100% safe at this point is probably a false statement. I mean, what, I guess kind of the same question to you, you know, for IU fans trying to look at this, you know, what are your initial impressions of what we know and maybe kind of words of caution or whatever else however else you kind of frame that up?
Well, I think the key is right now we don't know much beyond what that initial list of affidavits told us. And I think that the big issue we're going to run into moving forward is, okay, which of those people decide to roll over, as Ryan mentioned earlier, who do they decide to talk about, and where does it go from there? I don't know that even the FBI knows, frankly. And I think from an IU fan's perspective, I think you can feel fairly confident, but there still has to be some vigilance, because at the end of the day, even though IU certainly wasn't pulling in the sorts of recruits that the other major Adidas schools were pulling in over the last 4 or 5 years, it wasn't like they were totally bereft of high profile recruits, particularly ones that weren't necessarily from this geographical area. So not saying that there's any malfeasance there necessarily, just saying I don't know that anybody can feel completely 100% secure in, you know, what might or might not have happened, unless you have some kind of insider information. And if so, please tell us, we'd like to know. I think even moving forward, like, this is a really weird landscape. You know, we've already seen 3 5-star commits decommit from various places, 2 from Louisville, 1 from Auburn. This is going to really fundamentally change the map as far as where talent's going to be distributed. And that's just among not just among the players that have already committed, but frankly, the players that were getting ready to commit. I wouldn't be shocked if we saw some of those players wait until the last possible second, like sometime in the spring, because the chances of something shaking loose at a bunch of different top programs here over the course of the next 6 to 7 months seems pretty high. So, you know, why sign yourself up for something that you can't get yourself out of? That's I think, going to really be something to watch as we move forward here.
Two things real quick, with the Auburn thing, who would have thought that Bruce Pearl would have been caught up in something like this? Quite frankly, I mean,
Rick Pitino, shocked by that news. So
we're going to talk about this later, I think. But yeah, it's funny that Bruce Pearl was one of the ones wrapped up in it. It is kind of like too good to be true. And I understand where you're coming from on it, but I have a theory as to why, which we're going to get to a little bit later on.
I mean, look, anytime you enter the SEC world, you're going to get caught up in stuff like this, I think, pretty much, is my stance on it. But one thing I would say is that, yeah, if you're a recruit, I mean, there's no need for you to commit in, you know, if you're a top guy, I'm talking like, because schools will wait for you. It's one thing if you're, you know, a lower tier four star guy and you need to secure your spot. Yeah, you sign in November. It's completely understandable. But for these top guys, and you're starting to see them do it more often, they wait for the later signing period. And it seems like this year, as Galen mentioned, that's going to be the smart move because we don't know where this is going to go. Sure, if you sign a place, they'll let you out of your letter of intent if they get caught up in this, almost certainly. But at the same time, it just makes more sense, I think, to delay this year. And while that's going to drive us college basketball fans nuts, that seems like the right move.
Well, yeah, I think when you start looking at it, I mean, overarching how this changes recruiting for that, you know, everybody, and even Archie, since it's happened, I think, is, you know, had an in-home visit with Darius Garland almost immediately afterward and was down to see Romeo Langford, you know, maybe coincidentally, maybe not, you know, right as, you know, some of the Louisville news came out. But it's, you know, from a coaching standpoint, I think you have no choice but to go about it as business as usual when it's anything but that for the recruits themselves and trying to, you know, trying to kind of figure out where they want to go and what they want to do. And as you said, it didn't take long for anybody associated with these to ask out of letters of intent and things like that. And I think you're going to see, you know, a spring recruiting period for some of these guys, probably unlike any that we've seen in the past, because you just don't have any idea what may happen there. And so I think that becomes really hard to predict, makes some of the roster planning certainly a little bit difficult. Although in theory, a team like IU, who has a number of guys signed already, I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, Ryan, any thoughts around, you know, is it good, you know, having a lot of these guys obviously not signed at that point, but committed right now, or is all that, you know, potentially, you know, wishy-washy as we go forward and learn more?
You know, I think right now IU is in a position it needs to be in, especially since it's not named and there's nothing associated with IU as far as that goes. I think that Archie has picked guys who fit what he wants to do. So I would say that they're in a good position. I don't think anything needs to change there. Obviously, there's a spot open for those top tier guys if they do want to commit.
Well, and certainly from his perspective, you know, kind of what he said today, you know, based on what they know and what he knows at this point, he's certainly in a unique position coming in new and not having really been here at the program. He's got assistants that were different places. And so certainly nobody that's here was really tied to the program, but I think it's a little bit of, you know, trying to sort some of those things out as we go. So we'll figure out more about that. So stick with us. We didn't get a chance to hit the IU Media Day stuff. We're going to do that as soon as we come back. And so we'll hit on that and then look forward a little bit to what's going to happen this college basketball season. Stick with us. Welcome back. You are listening to The Assembly Call. Go to assemblycall.com/join right now to learn how to subscribe to our email newsletter. If you want to get more out of being an IU basketball fan, then you need to be on our newsletter list. You will get our weekly six-banner Sunday news roundups as well as our post-game analysis emails once the season begins. It's all free, and it will make you a smarter IU basketball fan. Again, the URL is assemblycall.com/join. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Ryan Phillips, my co-host on The Assembly Call IU post-game show, and Galen Clavio, the host of Crimson Cast. So we didn't get a chance to talk about the IU Media Day, you know, in our last segment. We got going too much on other things, as this week has proven to give ample opportunity to go down some wormholes that we didn't really think about. But what did want to kind of circle back to IU Media Day, talk about something actually on court related. as opposed to, backroom or hotel room related. So, a lot came out from the media folks covering IU today. Archie Miller met with the press. A number of members of the team did. Saw a team photo. All the good stuff there. So, Galen, give me something that really stood out to you based on the coverage that you saw or the videos that you watched about this year's team.
I think the biggest thing that stuck out to me was, from an individual player perspective, how much Deron Davis talk there was from Archie Miller. He was the first player that was mentioned when Archie was asked about, his three or four best offensive players and who you're looking for offensive production. Had a lot of really complimentary things to say about him. I thought that a lot of Deron's commentary about, what the conditioning process was like and how that conversation started with Archie and what it led to with him sticking around for an extra 4 weeks during the summer, I thought that was kind of cool to see. And I think that that was probably the biggest thing that stuck out to me. I mean, and we'd kind of heard that already from Archie earlier on in the summer as far as Deron Davis being a key part of the machinery moving forward. But I really think just above everything else, the atmosphere in that room that was emanating from Archie Miller and from the players just seemed so tremendously different from what we've experienced over the course of the past several seasons. And it's hard to really put your finger on, a particular reason why that is. Like, there was confidence. Certainly there was, a kind of a excitement, but it was a controlled excitement. The excitement that you get from knowing that you've got something in reserve that perhaps people aren't expecting. And that was really cool to see. I mean, I feel like one of the unfortunate hallmarks of IU teams over the past few years has been that they've always looked a little bit uneasy or sounded a little bit uneasy. And I think that's extended all the way up to the head coach. And you just really didn't get a sense of that at all when it came to listening to Archie Miller and the players talk today.
Ryan, what about you?
It was just confidence. These guys were just confident. And it's something, especially coming off a down year last year, I was shocked how confident they were. Robert Johnson was talking about, hey, we know we've got great players here. We know we've got the talent. And, guys like Deron Davis they just seem like they are in a better place. And also what struck me was the interesting that they kind of alluded to the fact that, sort of outright said it, that Archie's playing days and the fact that he was a point guard, a guy who saw the entire floor and was really, if you remember him from his days back on the court, and I kind of do, he was a scrappy guy, but he was also a cerebral guy. And I think that they've said that, it's easier to relate to him. It's really easy because he's going through, they're going through the same things he went through and he understands it. And, I think that that's, certainly, a beneficial to him in trying to get through to the players and relate to them and get them to do what he wants to do. He can, certainly say, hey, I've had this work and I've made this work before. And also on top of that, when I've been on the floor, this has helped me. So, I think that was a big deal. And I think that the fact that the kids were willing to mention that, speaks volumes.
Well, I thought it was interesting. I mean, that was the guys that were making those comments typically were the guys who we expect to handle the ball a lot. So you had Devontae Green mention that. You had, Josh Newkirk, you had Robert Johnson. And I think, it's one of those things where you kind of hope forward that manifests itself from a turnover perspective. I talked about defense at the top. Turnover is obviously the other, bugaboo that's been around this team these last couple of years. And so you hope that his experience there, particularly for those guys who will be the decision makers and the ball handlers, will be big ones. The other thing that I really liked, we talked so much last year about, guys not really having roles on the team. And I thought there was a series of tweets that, Mike Miller, shot out as he went. And it was, he wants Davis, Johnson, and Morgan to embrace being the primary scoring options. Wants to see Curtis Jones and Colin Hartman fill a shooting void. Wants Juwan Morgan to become more offensive minded, kind of tying that back. And made similar comments about some of the guys and Devontae Green. I think he is clearly articulating a view of what roles he expects these guys to play. And I think that makes it a lot more clear for them as we move forward, understanding.
I think it's also clear he's been listening to the show because
even
last year when he was at Dayton, he was clearly tuning in because lots of the complaints we had were addressed today, which is fascinating. But what it showed me was that he's a guy who's in tune with what didn't work last year. And not necessarily, you know, I mean, I'm sure whatever he was going to bring, what he was going to bring anyway, but he certainly watched last year's team and he's trying to address the problems that last year's team had and build on what was good and fix what was wrong as well, because he's the same players from last year for the most part. And, you know, he's going to have to work with them and make them better. And I thought that that was really interesting. Some of those points that you note were the complaints that all Indiana fans had all of that.
You're listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Ryan Phillips and Galen Clavio talking about some impressions from IU's media day today. Galen, I wanted to get your thoughts on if anything stood out about the freshmen. You know, that's one of the things we tried to talk about is starting to get a better feel for who the starting lineup might be. I think that probably is even more true after today. One of the questions was really around the point guard spot, and I think it sounded like Josh Newkirk was really assuming that role. But the other was the freshman, and certainly had some good praise for Race Thompson, who expects to redshirt. Anything stand out to you in terms of what Archie said about the other freshmen on the roster this year?
I don't know if anything stood out per se. I mean, I think probably the biggest thing would have been what he talked about with Clifton Moore, where he's put on about 15 pounds since he got to campus. He seemed to, be complimentary, seemed by talking about him the way that he did, that he had the opportunity once he got his footing to actually make a contribution. Like, he seemed to be moving forward quite a bit. Seemed to be very complimentary of his mobility, of his conditioning level. And, so that you got to feel good from that perspective. And I guess that would have been the biggest thing that stood out to me as far as any conversation on the freshman, other than the Race Thompson stuff, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like, and Clifton Moore is a guy who, given the front court depth in that situation, I think was a guy who everybody had a lot of questions about how much he's going to be able to come in and play. And at least, he's probably not going to get extended minutes, but I felt a little bit more reassured that he's going to get that opportunity to play based on some of the things that Archie said and his skill set and being able to, put on some weight, as we talked about. Ryan, Devontae Green has been a guy who, I know you've been high on him. I'm not sure if you discovered him. I lose track of which guys you did and did not actually discover, but I thought he had some interesting things to say about him as well, just in terms of, called him kind of a New York City guard and trying to help him. I don't know if it reined some of that in, but he also talked about his ability, his potential as a defender. So any takeaways for you in terms of what that might mean for Devontae Green's role as we look forward to the upcoming season?
Well, I think one of the reasons I always liked Devontae Green was when he was being recruited, they asked him what his goals were as a college player. And he said, I want to be the best defender in the nation. And you almost never hear that out of kids. So I loved that. And I'm sure Archie did too. There is some flash to his game. And there is sort of that, looseness to his game, where I think he needs to become a much tighter player with the ball and much tighter with his passes and with his ball handling. But I think that you see with him the potential to really be special. And he comes from great bloodlines, and he comes from, a family that knows success in basketball. His brother's Danny Green. Some people, I'm sure everyone knows that, but a guy who's won an NBA championship. So I think that, it's going to be interesting to see with him how he develops this year, as not being, that Josh Newkirk has the inside track to be the starting point guard. It'll be interesting to see how he develops, because I think he and Curtis Jones are really important as the future of the backcourt. In the short term future, and obviously their recruiting class is going to come in and challenge those guys. But those are two very talented players who could have a huge impact on Indiana basketball for a long time. And they really need to find their footing this year and be consistent.
Yeah, one of the big questions was really, around that point guard spot. And Galen, I wanted to get your thoughts on this with Josh Newkirk. I think one of the things that I know you guys have talked about a lot on Crimson Cast over the last few years, and just kind of in general in the Crean era, is the roles that guys are asked to play and having guys being asked to do things that you know, it's easy to criticize them after the fact, but it's, are they being asked to do things that they can't do? And I think if my memory serves, that there were some of those kinds of comments that you guys, you know, threw out last year about Newkirk and what he was really being asked to do and things that were being put on his plate, you know, from the prior coaching staff. So how do you think a guy like him benefits from change in coach, change in philosophy, a change in expectations and things like that as we look forward to a guy who sounds like is going to get first crack at having the keys to this offense?
I think he benefits tremendously because, look, Josh Newkirk, we were critical of him early. I thought he actually finished relatively well last year, but the nature of the offense, the frenetic pace, the kind of scramble of personnel, the weird substitution patterns, I mean, it all added up for a guy like Newkirk who, you know, he's only playing about 70% of available minutes, and he was a top 500 assist guy last year, which is good, but he turned the ball over on 24% of possessions. And I'm not totally convinced that that's all on him. I think a lot of that had to do with the way the offense was set up and what he was asked to do within it. And it's tough if you're a guy like Josh Newkirk and you've never been the starting point guard on a Big Ten team or a team of that caliber for a whole season. And you're thrown into that fire and you've got this chaos around you. I think that's a difficult ask for anyone. I'm happy that he gets a chance to play in maybe a little bit more sober offensive environment and also that he's got a year under his belt. So maybe the game's a bit slower for him and maybe he kind of understands that if he can drop that turnover rate 3 or 4% and keep everything else the same, suddenly he's doing the role that he needs to do in order for IU to be successful.
I'll give Josh this. He played so hard at the end of last year. He was one of those guys that never gave in and was playing extremely hard at the end of last year, despite all the negativity around the program and, you know, the way things went south for everybody. I thought he played really hard at the end of last year. Results weren't always there, but he was giving his all and hopefully, as Galen said, as they rein in the offense a little bit more and it maybe it'll fit him a little better and that'll help things along this year.
Yep, I would agree. So a lot of good things came out. Encourage everybody to go read the coverage of that. I'm sure, you know, a number of good stories will be out there and kind of big takeaways from that. So a lot of good stuff and more reason to get excited about the season as opposed to this off-court stuff. So, you know, so with that, we're going to get to our final segment where I wanted to take the scandal news from a slightly different perspective that I think Ryan and Galen can add some really good perspective on. So stick with us. We're almost done here on the Assembly Call. All right, welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Ryan Phillips and Galen Clavio, and wanted to wrap up talking a little bit more about the NCAA news that broke this week, but from a slightly different perspective. So, you know, one of the things that I've kind of found fascinating, this has been kind of on a couple fronts, and they all relate to one another. You know, a lot of national analysts have come out and said they knew this was going on. You know, in our email exchange, kind of preparing for the show, you know, Galen referred to it as, you know, kind of spiking the football that they knew this was out there. And then I've also seen a lot of people saying, you know, kind of coming back at those folks and being like, well, if you knew this was out there, why didn't you break the story? And kind of, you know, somebody should have done something about this earlier, which I think is kind of a weird situation. So Ryan, I want to get your perspective first. I know you and Jared a while back in the offseason, I think, talked about, you know, kind of your role as a journalist and breaking stories and, you know, what would happen if it was about IU and things like that. So as you view it, you know, kind of address the whole burden of proof that needs to be there to break a story like this, the potential pitfalls of breaking a story like it, and just kind of how you are viewing the kind of journalistic aspect of this from where you sit.
Well, if you're going to allege that somebody is breaking not only NCAA rules and potentially by doing that, ruining their career, or potentially breaking a law, you've got to have some pretty ironclad sources. It can't be rumors or whispers. You've got to have people going on the record almost always. Most outlets will demand that. They're cool with anonymous sources, but you've usually got to give up at least one of your sources to an editor behind the scenes. And you've got to reveal certain things that a lot of people aren't comfortable revealing because, you know, a lot of times that kind of information comes out and people get burned. And you know, it's not hard to figure out who those sources were. At least people, you know, close to them can get outed. And so I think that it's very hard to break a story like this. A lot of things have to line up correctly. And look, I mean, I've heard that stuff like this was going on for a long time, but I didn't have ironclad proof to go public and write a story. And depending on your outlet, you've got to have these things locked in, and you've got to, you know, the outlets, some outlets don't want to touch a story like this because it opens you up to criticism. It opens you up to lawsuits. It opens you up to a lot of things. And, you know, quite frankly, when it comes to when March rolls around, a lot of people are going to forget about this and they're going to say, hey, I want to fill out my brackets and not really care that something like this is going on and want to ignore it. And I think that a lot of news outlets and a lot of sports outlets are conscious of that and don't want to take the big risk that swinging at a story like this could take. But at the same time, let's remember that the FBI is different than a news organization. They had guys wired up. They had, you know, all of these things going on that a news organization just isn't going to do. They're not going to, you know, have a guy go undercover for a long time. They're not going to have a financial expert flip and tell them everything, you know, under the, you know, with the shadow of going to prison hanging over his head. So it's a lot tougher to do than I think a lot of people are giving credit for, but I you know, or are referring to, but I think that it's a very difficult story to break. You saw this with the steroid era in baseball. Everybody knew something was up, but nobody could break the story. And quite frankly, in some, to some degree, we were all having too much fun to want to look at the underbelly, and this is the result.
Well, and I think, you know, when you really talk about, you know, exactly what you said, to being able to have ironclad proof, there's all kinds of stuff that you could throw out there when it just turns into a he said she said type scenario that you're never really able to prove, at least too much in the absence of the kinds of concrete evidence that it sounds like the FBI has. So that was the one, you know, kind of natural rebuttal that I had when I heard that criticism. It's like, you know, the FBI can obviously do things that
they can subpoena financial records. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a different level of reach that they have.
Yeah. Galen, what about you? I mean, do you think that criticism is fair? Does it make sense to you as you see people, you know, kind of raising the red flag and saying, hey, look, if this was so bad, why didn't somebody else do something about it?
Is the, well, There's two different questions here. I think that the question of whether the criticism of journalists for not breaking the story, is that fair? No, I don't think that that's fair, because as Ryan laid out, you're not going to get the sort of information you need in order to go public with a story like that and have it be credible. I think the problem, and maybe this is where a lot of the frustration that fans have, is that the same, and I think this is primarily, almost exclusively, national basketball media, and maybe there's local people in other markets. I don't think it happens here, but you see a lot of puffing up of college coaches, kind of holding them up, doing things, you know, well, or being great coaches or this and that. And then when we find out that they've been cheating, when stuff like this pops up, suddenly it's like, well, you know, we kind of knew behind the scenes that stuff was going on. And the complaint is, well, if you knew that this guy was dirty, why were you also holding him up and you know, giving him all of this credit in public? And I mean, that's the dual-edged nature of the job. I mean, one of my big issues with college basketball in particular is it is so insanely coach-driven. You know, I mean, it is so, you know, the programs really belong to the coaches. The marketing is all built around the coaches. And so as a result, if you're going to be a media member covering college basketball, you have to have good relationships with the coaches, because that's where you're going to get your stories. That's, you know, they're the ones that control the access to the players. They're the ones that control access to stories around the programs. And if you don't have that, you really aren't going to be anywhere. So it's a catch-22 where the coaches end up commanding kind of an outsized amount of positive press. And you get a lot of media people who have to play along with that, or they feel like they have to play along with that, because it's what gives them the ability to do their jobs effectively. That doesn't mean that they don't realize that there's untoward stuff going on behind the scenes. And that also, I think, leads to the spiking of the football stuff we were talking about earlier, when stuff like this does come out. So it's a complicated issue, and it's one where I think if there's frustration, it's because it seems very inconsistent from – you know, the moment before we find everything out to the moment after we find anything out. And you really have to work in the business and kind of work with the people that, that cover the sport to understand why it ends up being that way.
Well, I think one thing that's worth noting too is, like the steroid era, I think that the attitude on this from a lot of people was, well, everyone else is doing it, so is it really that big a deal?
Absolutely.
You know? And is it worth, you know, putting my career at risk and going out and doing this if I don't have ironclad proof and I don't know, you know, how widespread it is, but it seems like everybody's doing it and it doesn't seem like anybody's really gaining a huge competitive advantage and blah, blah, blah. It's the same as the steroid era. That's my comparison. I thought that the other day that was Game of Shadows getting published and pulling back the curtain that we all knew was there, and showing the underbelly of this. And you know, and again, and I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon. I think it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, I mean, it probably will. And I think ultimately what you're dealing with the perception of the way that journalists cover this is, you know, it's a lot of stories. It's a lot of things that Ryan mentioned earlier, things that you've heard people that you trust, but you can't really corroborate. It's a lot of stuff. I mean, look what happened in the case here. I mean, you've got private meetings between coaches and players' parents in the coaches' houses. You've got Las Vegas hotel rooms where we only know what happened in them because the informant was wearing a wire.
Yep.
I mean, that's where the business is getting done. I don't know how you can be a reporter and you know, have any sort of chance of going in and doing that. I mean, you get arrested for doing that stuff. So, look, the issue is people don't understand. The average person doesn't understand. Well, if you know this stuff and you're a journalist, don't you have an obligation to report it? You do if you can substantiate it and corroborate it. And that's the big line between just what you hear from your buddies on the street and what you're doing as a practicing journalist. And that I think is the big differentiation here.
Yeah. So Ryan, real quick, just to wrap up in about 30 seconds, how do you think the journalist role kind of changes based on what we know now as you cover this story going forward? Probably a hard one to answer in 20 seconds, but go ahead and try.
I think that what's going to happen is a lot more people are going to start talking now that it's out there, now that we know what's going on. I think a lot of these sources that guys have cultivated over years are going to start opening up about what's going on there and what they've seen. And so I think that now you're going to start seeing a lot more of these reports that we haven't seen and that people are upset that we haven't seen.
Well, and I think as you start to see these, you know, coaches go down, there's no equity that you need to maintain, as Galen said, as you're covering them. So we'll see how that goes for sure as we go. But well, that will do it for us on this edition. I think we tried to jam as much as we could in on this topic, and certainly we'll cover it more as we go. If you want to see us do the show live and be part of the live chat, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast. Or you can always subscribe to our podcast by searching for Assembly Call wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to go to assemblycall.com/join to join our free email newsletter. Thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk IU hoops again next week. Until then, keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Assembly Call. We really appreciate you being here, and we really do rely on the support of audience members like you to keep The Assembly Call going and to keep growing. And we have set up a page on our website at assemblycall.com/support so that if you do want to support the show, there are a number of options, and we encourage you to choose whichever one is most convenient. On that page, you will find ways to donate, including how to set up a monthly recurring donation or annual recurring donation, as many folks have, or you can submit a one-time donation. Again, that is assemblycall.com/support. Or you can use our affiliate URLs, iutickets.shop or iustore.shop, and we will get a commission if you use that URL and make a purchase. Alrighty, thank you so much again for being here. Thank you for your support. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.